Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Gene Battaglia, it's been a while. How you been, buddy?
What's going on, Danger? Getting closer to sports. Had a good Father's Day. How was your Father's Day?
Father's Day. Wow, it feels like a distant memory now. I can say I can still feel the effects of Father's Day. I was at my brother-in-law's house. Many IPAs were involved. We were floating in the pool. We got out of the pool, and I went to take a step down towards some deck chairs, and your boy took a header. I completely missed a step, and I landed hard. And I looked, and I'm like, did a quick self-assessment. I'm like, all right, look, I skinned my knee. That's fine. No big deal. I think I'm fine. Could have been a lot worse. Until I woke up yesterday, Tuesday, I woke up, and my elbow is killing me. And I'm looking at my elbow. I'm like, is this more swollen than my other elbow? And I'm trying to really get a like good look at it. And through the course of yesterday, my elbow like ballooned up to the size of a lemon. And so I'm like, oh boy, this isn't good. This isn't normal. What is this? And you know, I do a little research. It looks like I've got a little bursitis of the elbow, Gino. So, you know, I'm in a little bit of pain. It's one of those things where you still feel the effects. We're old now. We can't do it the way we used to. But like you go out when you were younger and you tip some back and, you know, you can pretty much shake it off the next day and you're good to go. The older you get, the harder it is to do that without feeling the effects for a day or two later. And I still feel like I'm feeling the effects of Father's Day because of this pain I have in my elbow. I'm icing it constantly and chewing ibuprofen like they're Tic Tacs.
It's, 48 hours, though, after you would have figured that would have been Monday morning. Hey, there's something wrong. That's kind of
weird, though. Weird, right? Yeah, I went for a dad run on Monday night, and I woke up on Tuesday with this pain in my elbow. And the only correlation I can make is, well, I did take a pretty strong header, and there was some impact made there. That I imagine that that's what did it, a bursa sac. You know, is punctured or whatever, and then you have the swelling and the pain that comes with it. So that's what I'm dealing with now. I'm a gamer. You know, I'm not. This isn't enough to shut me down for the season. I'm not on IR. We are here in the sports bar after hours. Danger and Battaglia. We appreciate you listening and downloading wherever you enjoy podcasts, the radio.com app, and here at ESPNRochester.com. And Gino, it's been almost half a week since we've had the chance to speak. There's a lot that's gone on, and I've got a bunch of thoughts. I wanted to start with you and see where you want to start with.
Let's start with baseball and actually start with the one story. It's funny how, like, in our news cycle, we get tired of a story and we move on, but the story might still be there. And I'm talking about the virus, and that continues to be far and away the number one story in sports today. You could say in decades, you could say in our lifetime. It's great that baseball finally figured something out, but let's be realistic. Reading some of these reports, particularly tonight, the story from Ken Rosenthal that, well, Canadian border is still closed. And, well, are the Toronto Blue Jays going to be able to have training camp? You can't call it spring training. I don't know what you would call it. Much less would they have the season in Toronto. Would players be allowed to cross? Well, supposedly 3 to 5 days, the Canadian government's going to get back to Major League Baseball and let them know. But the story is, all right, well, if that doesn't happen, then, well, the Blue Jays won't be going north of the border, and you'd have to relocate. And the two locations that are being discussed right now, Dunedin, which is on the west coast there of Florida, where they would normally train. The other one being their AAA home, Buffalo, which they just kind of cool. But in the end, what does it matter if there aren't any fans? We'll be watching Major League Baseball from the stadium that was once known as Pilot Field. I don't know the corporate name on it now, but I'd like to see, of course, them get the situation resolved up in Canada. But it just, boy, if you kind of dovetail that with this report that, you know, from the NFL, that you could have stadiums tarping off the front rows of seats to put ads on there. Well, I'd like to think that probably all NFL teams have season ticket holders that have paid good money to be in those front rows, and particularly the end zone, because that's where they like to be. So if you're going to allow fans in the stands, wouldn't they be offended if they were getting, that's what might actually be happening, that this would be the plan if there are no, and we'll just turn it into one big NASCAR event where there'll be billboards all around the football field and ads on everything. So, I'm getting excited about sports, but it's also making me a little nervous here about what we're going to see.
Yeah, I remain unchanged. I don't know that we're going to have any kind of action until there's a virus. And you know, you might see some action without fans. But, you know, games as we know them with spectators in the state, like, I'm going to hit pause on that and say probably not until there's a virus. And if you believe what you're hearing, that's the soonest we'll have that will be the end of the fall, you know, November,
vaccine,
maybe December. Right. If you have a vaccine, then we can talk. But I don't know. A couple of thoughts based on what you just said. First of all, did I see that baseball, Gene, is considering ties for the abbreviated season as part of that modified extra inning plan that they're going to implement here?
You know, and if you're going to like go with this year, you know, going back, okay? So if you were going to say to the Players Association, yeah, you know what, guys, you can work less hours. And I'm sure that, you know, for the specialist out of the bullpen, that might be a little upsetting, but they'll still have a job. So, yeah, I mean, the idea that we saw it here in Triple-A baseball, that you'll put a runner on second base to begin extra innings, let's move it along. And you know, call me the purist, Danger, and I know, okay, you use your snob voice if you want. I hate it, but I also recognize that baseball has some issues when it comes to getting a younger audience. So the idea that the 18 inning 4-hour game, yeah, you still might get that once in a blue moon, but I don't think that's what the normal sports fan wants. They want to watch it in a normal TV window. So yeah, let's speed this up and determine it out. And by the way, if they're going to experiment with the DH in the National League, then we will no longer have pitchers batting. And I hate that too, as a purist snob, but I also recognize that normally pitchers batting, it's bad television, it's boring. So get up somebody out there.
I'm anti DH. I hate the DH. I love seeing pitchers go up to bat. And you know what's wrong with that? What's wrong with step into the batter's box, you coward? Swing a bat. I hate the DH. I just want more than anything, I want everyone to see the irony in what baseball has done with this abbreviated season and the modified extra innings plan that they're implementing here. Baseball wants their competition between two sides that has gone on for far too long and remains unresolved to be a tie so everyone can just get on with their lives. Is that what's being proposed here? It's the only way that they know how to do things in baseball, and I'm convinced that everyone involved, the players, the owners, they're all involved, and they're all hell-bent on ruining this once great sport.
Yeah. Well, you could put it under the guise of we need to be safe and need to get, you know, staff home, and we don't want to chance it beyond, but right, if they're going to start with the second, there is a new CBA that needs to be hammered out, and I'm sure the Players Association would be like, yeah, you know what, let's finish the game. But they don't care, finish the game in, nine innings, and then if it goes to 10, then it goes to 10. I don't see we'll have like a day next year we'll have ties in baseball. What's the purpose of that? But the runner on
it's what they're considering base, it though, right? It's something that they've discussed.
It's no, I think what's going to happen, Danger, this year is the what you saw in AAA, and that was the trial balloon last year. And
that's the minimum, right? That's the minimum they'll do that. But they could still implement ties for an abbreviated season just to move things along, which, again, I just want everybody to kind of see the irony in Major League Baseball. What they're trying to do with each game is what they've been failing at the entire offseason, trying to get something resolved so that everyone can just get on with their lives. It really is the Major League Baseball way, and I think it's just ruining everything about baseball.
Well, and to follow up your point, I I hate the DH too, but I like the strategy that's involved. Like, do you you gonna send up Scherzer to bat here in the seventh, or are you gonna try to score a couple more runs? Well, you don't have that. You know, you and I could manage in the big leagues, and that's where it's kind of going, right? As long as you know how to manage egos in the clubhouse and how to read the analytics, the computer's going to tell you what to do here when it comes to certain situations. So, yeah, baseball. You know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. So baseball needed some changes. And in a year of change, it's not going to feel right or anything like that. I think people will give it a pass. The thing that upsets me the most is that, the NBA was first. And, yeah, you're going to see ads on Major League Baseball uniforms. That's not getting much play, but that is coming. And you're going to hear about deals that are being cut right now because – yeah, owners are not going to want to take that big a hit. And if you could put a McDonald's logo on a Yankee uniform or whatever, you know, it's going to be, yeah, this is the first step. And that's there's going to be no going back too, by the way, on that when they see the revenue that's going to come in from ads on uniforms.
Yeah, no question. Now, I wanted to get to the other part of what you discussed, the NFL season and the chatter that's out that you know, teams will be allowed to serve fans on game day based on how the community, each individual community, is faring against COVID-19. So let's just say that the Bills are allowed up to 50% capacity at New Era Field. And I think, again, that's a dream scenario. I think the reality is going to be closer to no fans until there's a vaccine. But my question becomes then, Gino, will you, the fan, be forced to pay more to go to a game in order for teams to make up for their lost revenues over the course of a season? If limited season is a thing, what's your expectation? Could you see a situation with lower prices early on to kind of squash fears and be more inviting and accessible to fans that still have an interest in coming out, or maybe higher prices once we've reached a comfort level, normal pricing by the stretch run of the season? Do we lose? I think what we lose sight of sometimes when we talk about it, the games exist not just for our amusement and our pastime. There's a lot of work being done. There are a lot of jobs on the line. It's still a business. Our fun, our casual distraction is how thousands, literally thousands of people, pay their bills. So what are you, as a sports fan, willing to contribute should you be allowed to go to some of these games?
Yeah, I can't see. You know, I don't know the particulars of when a deadline would have been as far as payment for season tickets, but I would have to think that, if you wanted to renew, that money's already in the bank. So I can't imagine the Bills or any other team saying, oh, by the way, if you want to go, pay more. I think the problem, and you kind of grazed on this a little bit, is, all right, so what do you do with concessions? That's such a big part of going to sporting events. And can you comfortably go up and grab a beer and do the 6 feet thing? And by the way, if you've been to New Era Field, yeah, good luck going through one of those restrooms and trying to, you know, keep your 6 feet apart. There's just hard to see this happen. But I'll say this. I think what the NFL showed with the draft, how all of us are thinking, not all of us, but a lot of us were thinking, boy, they're really going to put this on. This is really going to work. Why are they even doing this? And it ended up being an enjoyable product on television, although very different, but I was amused by it. I was entertained. I'm sure a lot of other people were. So are we going to just the NFL in general? I would think that they're going to put on the product and it'll be a little different television wise. And if you're going to go to the game, and if you're in Buffalo, yeah, that part of the fun of going to a Bills game is you're there with the 70 some thousand other fans there that are all in unison here.
How do you police tailgating? How do you police tailgating, Gene? How do you police the people that are traveling into our state from places like Florida, given the news today? Not to politicize, you know, sports, but, you know, these are the things that I think we have to kind of keep in mind. Like, it sure feels like at times that it's being made up as it goes, right? Like, phase four is scheduled to reopen in our region on Friday. But that does not include gyms, malls, movie theaters. But there's no explanation given as to why that can't be a part of it other than, well, we're conducting research. You'd be amazed at the research we're conducting and the reasons why we're not doing this. So you mean to tell me that certain things can be open, other things cannot? And when it comes down to the sporting events that we enjoy to consume and go see in person, how is that going to pass, you know, and nobody can predict what September looks like. We can't predict what next week looks like when half of the states in the union right now are in big doo-doo when it comes to their numbers with COVID-19, that they're seeing surges. And those places, there are a lot of places that include professional football teams, college football teams. And we don't spend enough time talking about what the lack of a college football season could mean to a lot of these schools and a lot of these programs. I'm not willing to say that college football is a go. I mean, is anybody willing to say like, oh, yeah, that's going to happen for sure? I think there's just way too many questions that need to be answered. And it feels like a lot of times our elected officials are kind of making this up as they go.
Yeah. And I'm not going to ping anybody because who knows? I mean, it's like usually you go on history and none of us are around, you know, when the flu pandemic of what, 1918 or whenever it was came around. So what you're saying, though, if I could, you know, no casino, no gym, I'd have to think going to a sporting event would be the very last thing on the list. So maybe, and I'm just connecting dots here, if you're getting the story out of Sports Business Journal or was it the Wall Street Journal, one of the two, talking about the ads going, they're going to tarp the seats you see on television with ads. Well, that just tells me that's a big clue that, yeah, you maybe some of these teams are preparing for no fans. Let's cut our losses and try to make money on whatever possibly we can. And also, too, I mean, for the players on the field, I mean, gosh, particularly in Buffalo, you can't jump in the stands. You got to stay away from it. I mean, how do you keep your players in that bubble if you have thousands and thousands of fans? And inevitably, somebody's going to bring it in, right? So,
yes.
I want to go to a sporting event. I want to go to a Red Wing game. And I'd love to go to a Bills game. And I don't see that happening. This sports today is a made-for-TV event. Going to the games is not the main driver of revenue, so make sure that at least you're getting the big part of the pie, which is television. The other thing, too, Danger, and you talked about the college part of this, Geneseo, St. John Fisher, or some of these local schools here, they're announcing that, okay, we're going to pull up the semester here a little bit. And you've probably heard this too. And there's other schools like Ithaca where it's going to be the third week in August, everybody's going back. And then, boom, break by Thanksgiving, and you could do the finals online. Well, when this story of COVID-19 first hit sports, the first one to move, and you recall this too, and I remember exactly what you said. We heard the problems that were going on, and all of a sudden, the first one, Ivy League. No, they didn't pull winter sports. Spring sports canceled. Like, what do they know? What do they do? You and I looked at each other, and you're like, yeah, those are some of the smartest people in America, Ivy League presidents. So kind of along those lines, I look at when we're looking for tells here a little bit, you know, that talk of the second wave here coming, you know, when the weather kind of gets bad here, that's where, yes, colleges, we're going to try to get through here, but if it gets really bad in November, we're going to have to cut it short. That's another major concern I have when it comes to the NFL. And if you have a full stadium of fans in September and October, I think you're playing with fire there, so to speak, when it comes to your chances here, because if schools are fearful for what may happen toward the end of the calendar year, well, I'm sure the NFL has that in the back of their mind, too.
Gino, I want to talk a little bit about what we see on the field and stop speculating for a moment as to what this season could look like. Because I saw an interesting statistic that again, kind of feeds into the optimism that I think a lot of Buffalo Bills have going into the 2020 season, which is a season I think a lot of Bills fans hope actually happens, because you have a team in the Buffalo Bills that if they live up to the hype, they're going to be good this year. They've built this team with players, diverse, versatile skill sets. And now with the addition of Stephon Diggs, they become one of only two teams with not one, Gene, but two wideouts who ranked top 15 in success rate versus man and press coverage. This according to Yahoo's Matt Harmon and his reception perception, which is, again, another great stat if you want to feel optimistic heading into the season. but it's a stat that to me is pointless if the quarterback doesn't improve. And Josh Allen has been working with Jordan Palmer again this offseason. Be interested to see if he lives up to a lot of the preseason hype that he's been getting. It seems like every day there's another columnist or another talking head ready to crown Josh Allen the best quarterback in the AFC East. I'm not there yet.
Well, who's the in the running with? They ain't going to be Fitz and Sam Darnold. You know, the debate right now? Yeah, I mean, I would give Josh Allen, but that can all change within a month. But John Brown is a good receiver. John Brown didn't really have that, you know, number two opposite what we thought Robert Foster would be that guy. And yeah, Cole Beasley is fine in the slot. Now you bring in a Stephon Diggs. And you and I had a fun, do you remember this fun debate? If Stephon Diggs doesn't end up number one in whatever statistical category you want to bring up, does that mean the trade was a bust? And you kind of said, kind of, yeah. And I said, no, as long as the offense is moving the football, don't look at it through fantasy terms. If look at it overall, big picture, because what Stephon Diggs should do is, well, I would expect John Brown's numbers to tick up a little bit. If you have expectations that Josh Allen is going to take a step forward, then I would think John Brown might take a step forward. And we know Stephon Diggs is good too. So, but I was a little surprised to learn that information that you have two, you know, as you said, man and press, two top 50. And what was the other team? Atlanta, I think it was.
Atlanta's so, the other team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're playing in pretty rarefied air when you're talking about what Atlanta has in terms of their wide receiving core as well. So, you know, an optimistic point of view on the Bills' wide receiving core. It was a core that I think a lot of people were curious about prior to the NFL draft. And, of course, by making that deal for Stephon Diggs, they took themselves out of the running for that elite wide receiver in the draft and rather said, you know what, now is our window, now is our time. Why are we waiting around? We know we have a commodity in Stephon Diggs. And we hope that we have a quarterback that can deliver him the football. And Gene, I'll stand by it. My expectation is he will be the Bills' leading receiver, that you should feed him the ball, that he should be that difference maker. And John Brown is nice. John Brown's a number two. At best, he's a number two. He's not a number one. Stephon Diggs is and wants to be that number one. He's going to have every opportunity to do so. And, you know, seeing this statistic just shows once again that the Bills have guys with versatile skill sets, guys that can not just succeed against one type of defense, but, you know, both of these receivers having success against man and against press coverage. Another reason to feel optimistic, provided that Josh Allen does make that step in year three and improves at getting the football to his guys.
All right, I'll ask you a question here. Who is the better receiver opposite Stephon Diggs? Is it John Brown or was it Adam Thielen?
It's John Brown. I think Adam Thielen, I think Adam Thielen is a nice story. I'm going to be a little bit slanted here towards Minnesota because I grew up there. I know the Thielen name because Thielen's family owns like a chain of motorsports stores throughout the state. And so Thielen comes from Minnesota wealth. I'll just say that, right? So, you know, he's had opportunities that a lot of kids growing up in Minnesota didn't have. And it's a nice story to hear of a kid, you know, from a local university kind of walking on the team and getting his shot. But I think that's part of why he's there is because it's a nice story and because people in Minnesota know him and it's easy to root for him. And I think his skill set is nice for the NFL, but I don't think he's
he's not a number one.
I don't view him as a number one. I view him as a piece. I view him as a Wes Welker type of receiver where John Brown has the explosiveness and you know, man, maybe if he had a different situation, was dealt a different set of cards at the start of his career, he could have been. I mean, the couple of years there in Arizona playing with Fitz, where John Brown was a stud. He looked the part, and I think his health is what forced Arizona to kind of move on from him prematurely. I think he's still got game. I just don't know that I see him as a number one. But as a number two, yeah, I like John Brown in his role going into this year.
Yeah, and I think maybe the value of Stephon Diggs will show up. Sorry, Viking fans, when you realize, oh, our offense here might be a little more stagnant. So, yeah, looking forward to camp here as we're just about a month away here from the Bills reporting out to Orchard Park.
Do you want to address anything going on with NASCAR? Because that happened since the last time we've spoken as well, Gino.
I'm not upset about.
Okay, well, let me just share my angle here really quick, and then you tell me where you stand on it, because I think that what NASCAR did was the right thing, obviously, but what they did was all built on a falsehood, and it makes me cynical. It really does. I mean, what happened, I don't think, is going to change much in terms of NASCAR and how it's viewed, in my opinion. If there's a constant in everything that we've seen since the death of George Floyd, it's that embracing equality, at least right now in this moment, it's very good for business. And I don't want to be that kind of black and white about it, but NASCAR is having a good week. Just remind me how much better things are going to be for everyone 4 years from now, 20 years from now, 50 years from now, because change, in my opinion, starts with personal accountability, a real genuine focus on the content of your character. And I guess I would ask the question, would Bubba Wallace have been shown the same solidarity from his NASCAR competitors, his NASCAR teammates, the owners in NASCAR, if it was not for a noose that really wasn't a noose? I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, and glad that the FBI went in there and figured this out. What are the lessons to be learned here? And what I was going to say is I'm not upset, because some people are like, oh, this is the rule of journalism. Make sure you put until you know all the facts. Well, look, NASCAR put this out, right? It wasn't a reporter. NASCAR themselves in a statement, hey, we found the news. And my gosh, in 2020, we're still doing this. And it's interesting, they still say they're investigating. Notice that. The FBI said, nope, that was there. There was nothing. But NASCAR's got a long way to go to get to be a mainstream sport. They were kind of on that path during the 1990s when they had big personalities. That's what the sport is missing. Not to take this in a different direction, but you don't have your Earnhardt Seniors. You don't have Jeff Gordon. You don't have the good guys and the villains. But if you do, some people might say, but it doesn't register on the national scene. So here you have Bubba Wallace, somebody that, okay, maybe we can get behind here. Maybe the face of NASCAR is going to change. And
but think about it, Gene. I mean, for all of the noise that gets made around the NFL about the NFL not having enough minority head coaches, you're not hearing the same conversations about diversity in NASCAR. And that would be, to be the sport that probably needs it more than anything. I mean, it there feels like there's a lot of kind of loose ends. And again, I fall on the side of personal accountability. Like I see a lot of words and I want to see more action. And I think every organization is saying the right thing and trying to do the right thing. And I think to myself, you know, how many times has a school mascot name been changed, and how much good and change has it really made? How much better of a place are we in terms of equality now that we've made all of these changes? I don't know that they do anything until we look in the mirror, until we hold ourselves accountable, until we really focus on our own character. We you know, make sure that we're making the you know, positive choices, fill our hearts with love, surround ourselves with family, educate ourselves, get out there and make a difference in the world, rather than just, you know, spew out a list of platitudes because it's good for the bottom line. Then I will believe that we're making a change. I just don't believe that what has happened with NASCAR, and NASCAR is having a nice week. Monday was memorable. I don't know that it's going to change anything in terms of the fight for equality.
Oh, I disagree with you, bud. I think that, and I'm not talking about what happened this past weekend, but go back 2 weekends ago, okay? Sorry, I'm going to swear. How the fuck is the Confederate flag still a part of this country? That needs to go. And that wasn't NASCAR putting it out. It was the NASCAR fan. I know I'm going to upset a lot of people, but to me, NASCAR represented the last bastion of good old Southern racism, when you could go out and proudly wave that flag. That, what does it really mean? I mean, and we still have a state that has it in. So yes, and I still go back to the zero tolerance policy when it comes to that, that symbol. Okay. A lot of people is very offensive.
Understood.
So for NASCAR to say, hey, get that out of here. Now this weekend, the story, yeah, that it was. I don't know what to make of what happened this past weekend, but to me, NASCAR, admittedly, they probably alienated some of their base, and you know, but you know what? You don't need those people, honestly. Just go away and rebuild and bring in a new audience. It's 2020.
Okay, so to what end? I don't disagree with you, and I'm not like saying, hey, everybody should have the right to wave their Confederate flag. It does nothing for me. I don't really, you know. Good, get rid of it, fine. But my question then is, to what end? You know, to bring it back to the Ivy League, which we were talking about before. I mean, Yale University was founded by Elihu Yale, who was a British merchant who, by the way, had lots and lots of slaves. He controlled slaves. Are we changing the name of Yale University? Is that, you know, like, to what end? And when will it actually start making an impact? Because I feel like we continue to have these conversations, and we've had them now for a generation plus. At some point, when are we going to hold ourselves accountable to how we treat others, regardless of the color of their skin?
Well, and yeah, and there's, look, I mean, yes, we're looking at all these figures in history that, oh, okay, maybe Columbus wasn't such a good guy. And look, make a little bit light of this. There's a petition going around. I don't know if
Flavor Town.
Yes, you saw it. Okay, so yes, Columbus, Ohio. Why, Christopher Columbus? Boy, bad guy, rapist, had slaves. What are we honoring this guy for? Let's rename the city. And to me, you're going to take the statue down, put it in a museum. We have to know and learn from history. Not to get all preachy here, but how to get better, well, you got to look where we were, okay? So, no, you don't rename Yale, but you kind of tell the story of this guy, right? And the same thing with Columbus, Ohio, all right? And all these other statues that are coming down, put it in a museum and explain who this was, and that way we can learn from it. I mean, don't bury the past, learn from it.
I want all of us to kind of look in the mirror and start holding ourselves personally accountable to how we treat others, regardless of the color of their skin. And you know, it was Martin Luther King that said, let's not focus on the color of a man's skin, but the content of his character. If you keep that fundamental thought in your head, then everything kind of takes care of itself. It's a tough thing for a lot of people to wrap their head around, though. And I think, especially when you're talking about fan bases in NASCAR, I don't know that the elimination of the Confederate flag or everybody rallying around Bubba Wallace is going to change the way they view the world. I hope it does. I hope it does. But I'll believe it when I see it. Check in with me in another 4, 10, 20 years, and let's see if we're still having this conversation. I hope we're not. I sincerely hope we're not.
I mean, 4 years ago, when have we learned what that was all about? And I think what was putting us off was there were certain things with Kaepernick that we just didn't like, whether it was the pig socks, and he, you know, in going about what he did, we held him to like an Ali standard of activism, and no, but now, funny how 4 years now later that, yeah, you will see a lot of players kneeling at the anthem, and you're not going to have the NFL trying to sweep this away. And the president might come out and say, this is abhorrent. And you get, well, I think we understand now what that's really all about. And given a little bit of time and listening to people and kind of just digesting that story, for some of us took 4 years. Some of us, you know, will still, like Drew Brees, still be on the other side, even though he's got that nice Instagram photo of
stock footage, yeah, whatever. It's nice. It's good.
Yeah, but yeah, so I mean, can we just agree, Danger 2020? Let's, you know, I'm ready for 2021, buddy. I'm ready for the sports bar back, buddy.
Well, the good news is we're still here. We're still doing what we love, talking sports in the sports bar, albeit after hours at ESPNRochester.com. Mike Danger along with Gene Battaglia. The same can't be said for a lot of people in our industry who are on the wrong side of unemployment right now. They're looking for work and looking for work at a tough time to be doing so. I mean, we heard a few weeks ago of some of the cutbacks at the Athletic, and one of our own from our radio.com sports sister station yesterday was let go. Paul Hamilton from WGR was let go. And I got to say, Gino, I loved having Paul join us when he did in the sports bar over the course of our time on the air. He was always generous with his time. He was never afraid to question everything and everyone within the Sabres organization. You read the stories of how many people that Paul helped get going in our industry, and it's nothing short of inspiring. So I'm sure that Paul is ready to land on his feet, and the organization that picks him up eventually will be better for it. Until then, Paul, I hope you, if you're listening, I hope you enjoy your gift of time. Breathe easy, knowing that you could ease off the gas when it comes to covering a team that's become the NHL's laughingstock.
Yeah, if I can kind of, Paul, with Seattle coming in and go apply for a job, there are 31 other teams, okay? 30, by the way, they're all run better than Buffalo, and I'm including Ottawa in there. So, Paul will find another job, undoubtedly, and I hated to see that. We're not a better hockey region without a Paul Hamilton as a reporter. I'm sorry. And by the way, Joe Yurton for that matter.
Yes.
I have a lot of respect for Joe as well.
Yeah. The Sabres irrelevance, again, this is the thing we forget, you know, this is our fun little pastime. This is our fun little escape from reality, talking about and watching and debating sports. But we forget that it employs thousands of people. And, you know, when you're a team like the Sabres, harder to justify that expense if you're a corporation like the Athletic or like radio.com, and you have to make some of these tougher decisions. Hate to see it happen to a great guy like Paul Hamilton, but we know that Paul will be better on the other side, and we can't wait for that day.
Yeah, I mean, what are we going to have in terms of Sabres? Oh, that's right. Friday night will be the first phase of whatever this NHL lottery. Are you freaking kidding me? Like the NHL, again, hey, let's have a lottery. Oh, let's put it on a Friday night when nobody's paying any attention.
Yeah, I again, I'm skeptical about all of it, Gino. I mean, they have yet to determine the dates of any kind of return to play. I don't even know. Do they have the hub cities finalized? I don't even know that they have that finalized yet.
To bring this full circle, the story with the Blue Jays, they're like, can we go across the border? Can teams come up here? Well, there are a bunch of teams that are still alive in the NHL postseason, Montreal, Toronto, or Edmonton. Are they going to... I think they've been given clearance, but so much logistically has to happen. And, you know, the story last week with the Lightning facility down in Tampa, I mean, yes, it's no, they have not. They eliminated, I saw this week, a few of the cities, namely Columbus or Flavortown.
And Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Yeah, there was a couple of them that will not be the hub city. Buffalo would have been a good hub city, but I don't know if you saw that little anecdote that somebody forgot to melt the ice properly.
Yeah, well, that's Buffalo. We can't even melt ice properly with this organization. It's crazy.
Wish that were a joke.
Yeah, no, it's the truth. It's fine. I got my hockey fix watching Youngblood on Monday night. It was on the NHL Network, my favorite hockey movie of all time. And with each viewing, it just more and more, man, it does not hold up over time. I mean, it's still my favorite. I got to stick to my guns. I'm not saying it's the best. It's my favorite. I like it for its grit. I like it because when I was growing up playing hockey in Minnesota, there wasn't a kid that I played hockey with that didn't want to be Dean Youngblood at some point. I mean, all of us had aspirations of getting with the coach's hot daughter and being the guy that could score goals, the pretty boy that could score goals and also drop the gloves. Although I will say the final fight scene in that movie, just over the top with a stick joust to get the fight going, like something you would never, ever in a million years see again in the NHL, yet it's happening in this movie. Youngblood, still my favorite. Get out of here with your Cake Eater Disney bullshit and the Mighty Ducks. I'm not listening to it. Mighty Ducks is not a good hockey movie, not a good representation of hockey. It's a watered-down Disney version of hockey. Give me Youngblood. Give me grit. Give me some blood. Give me some concussions. Give me some nailing of the coach's daughter. And now we've got a movie I'm interested in.
I think just the overall theme here, and I think a lot of us have gone back and watched things we haven't watched in decades. And I favorite sitcom all time for me, it's actually Cheers. I just thought it was funny growing up, and I've been binging it with my wife. Some of it doesn't hold up.
No.
I'm like, whoa. I mean, you realize it now. And like, oh, Sam just slapped Diane. And this was on network television?
Uh-huh.
This is, oh.
Hey, look, we are getting better. We are improving. It just, you know, it's not fast enough for a lot of people. And I don't know if, you know, these changes that have been made are making an impact. I mean, maybe they are. It's just glacial. It feels glacial. I went back and watched The Sopranos. And I remember watching The Sopranos when it was originally on and thinking it was a good but not great show. I mean, you know, plenty of TNA for my, you know, the younger audience out there that were like, oh, yeah, you know, like I like watching The Sopranos because, I, you know, they're at the Bing and there's going to be boobs on TV. That's awesome. But, you know, the violence and the misogyny and the racism and everything that went with it back then, I don't know that everybody would have made it. Like watching it now, like you watch it through a different lens, through a different filter. Now I have two daughters, so I'm not as, you know, compelled to watch it because of the Bada Bing scenes as I am, you know, like watching it through the eyes of Tony Soprano and how he's dealing with his kids and being a dad of two and trying to manage, you know, a marriage and work and everything that he's going on, and watching it a second time. You know, lots of things about it do not hold up. It would not hold up in 2020, but it was an interesting thing to watch through a different lens. And it actually made the show, in my opinion, made the show better watching it a second time as an adult versus a young adult who still had some maturity issues to deal with.
Yeah. And what are we talking, like 20 years ago?
Yes.
Since that show. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the final season aired in 2004, yeah. I want to say.
Yeah. So they did stretch it out, HBO, and that was the show, right, of the early part of that decade. That was the must see television, and I don't know if we ever have like appointment television like that again. You just get it on demand. No,
it's yeah. You have shows that you hear about, and if you have the chance to check it out, you check it out. Whatever you do, Gino, don't make the mistake I made. I watched a show that my daughter wanted to binge with us. We watched it together. We watched Outer Banks on Netflix. I don't know if your daughter is into this. If she's tipped you off to it, avoid it if you can. It's like watching an Abercrombie catalog that's been dredged through a bog. Just not for me.
No. And hopefully my daughter's not listening to this, and I doubt she is, but no, I'm not in my list.
Keep watching Cheers. It's so boring. Let me introduce you to Outer Banks. You'll love it. You will not love it.
No, you weren't a Cheers guy, Danger?
Occasionally. It wasn't something I watched all the time. I mean, you know, growing up watching sitcoms, I feel like you had a platter, and I didn't watch anything with any great regularity, but I watched enough Seinfeld to know that I liked that show. I watched enough Cosby Show to know that I liked that show. I watched enough Cheers to know that I liked that show. You know, like, I didn't watch every week. It wasn't appointment watching for me, but you know, enough to know that, all right, these were good shows. You know, Friends was another one. It's like, I didn't watch every episode, but I watched to know, all right, I can get into this show. It's fine. But you know, Cheers might have been just a little bit more mature than I was ready for at the time that it was peaking.
That's the slight age difference between
just a
you
slight
and
age difference between that's the just a little one. Bit. Yep.
Yeah. So to me, and to me, it peaked right when Diane left, and somehow they got another 6 years out of it. So.
Yeah, with Kirstie Alley, right?
Yeah, Kirstie Alley came in, and yeah.
Yeah, I was more comfortable watching that rapist Bill Cosby be a good dad on the Cosby Show. Weird. It's just weird.
Weird.
It is all weird, man. All right. Well, we continue to navigate through the weirdness, the uncharted time that we are in here. We'll be back again later this week with another episode of the Sports Bar After Hours. We appreciate you listening and downloading at the radio.com app, wherever you enjoy listening podcasts, and here at ESPNRochester.com. Gino, have a great night. Talk later this week.
Thanks, Danger. You too.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.